Hello everyone and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, Content Manager at the Institute, and in this podcast we will be looking at news up to the 11th of May 2020. And joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello Kate.
Hello Rod.
Well, our first story, Kate, asks what can leaders learn from Yale's study of selfish behaviour? Selfish people's minds play tricks on them to swerve around behavioural embarrassment and maintain a positive self-image, according to new research highlighted in business and leadership journal Fast Company. Crucially, this motivated misremembering effect occurs chiefly for individuals whose choices violate their own fairness standards, irrespective of how high or low those standards are. In a statement, Yale researcher Ryan Carlson said, "Most people strive to behave ethically, but people sometimes fail to uphold their ideals. In such cases, the desire to preserve a moral self-image can be a powerful force, and not only motivate us to rationalise our unethical actions, but also revise such actions in our memory." Kate, what are the implications here for authentic leadership, particularly in areas such as accepting responsibility for failings or instances of poor conduct?
Well, this really useful insight, I think, here, Rod, comes from George Herbert Mead, of course, and he focused on time and our understanding of time and acknowledged that we actually are always reinventing the past because of the present. So we're making a new sense of what went before because of what we know now. And similarly, we're always reconstructing what we think the future is going to be based on what we know now. So this isn't misremembering, I don't think, or your mind playing tricks on you. It's what we do. And when it comes to leadership, we know we're going to try and justify our actions afterwards, because that's one of the ways actually that we can cope with cognitive dissonance, we can cope with what we've done being so different between what we believe in, is to call out behaviour as it happens. So if we think something's wrong, if we think something's unethical, call it out then in the moment. Don't leave it weeks or months, because not only the individual's concerned, but you yourself might have reconstructed the past and thought about it differently, which will include, of course, not having done anything about it at the time. So the time to challenge unethical behaviour is when it's happening, I think, is the main lesson for us here. But again, not to think that we're misremembering or tricking ourselves, but this is an essential part of our thought processes.
Okay, thanks, Kate. That's an excellent detailed response. Our next story asks if organisations need specially dedicated COVID-19 officers. As the COVID-19 crisis goes on, half of UK workers are ready to return to work as long as their employers put appropriate safety measures in place. That's according to a survey of 2,000 people from global legal services firm DWF. However, just a few days before DWF published its findings, city law firm RPC warned employers that any failure to keep records of the safety procedures they have evaluated or implemented in the process of reopening to staff could leave them exposed to legal risks. RPC Legal Director Kelly Thompson said, "The challenge for businesses cannot be underestimated. They need to get going again. In many cases, it is an existential need, but they must also understand the expectations and responsibilities they have to their employees and customers. Even the best prepared employers will face difficult decisions and judgment calls when it comes to reopening workplaces." Kate, given the dramatically heightened health and safety climate as employees begin to reopen their premises, should organisations consider recruiting specially dedicated COVID-19 officers?
That seems rather a bureaucratic response, doesn't it, Rod, that we're going to have to train a whole different group of people, when, of course, those companies that exercise their duty of care responsibly and well know about looking after their employees. They know about looking after their customers. And this is really an extension of that. But I do agree with Kelly when she says it's difficult decisions, judgment calls will be made, and sometimes mistakes will be made. We know that because that's what happens in organisations. So it's a genuine intention to put the safety of your employees first, to care about the safety of your customers, has to be paramount. And there aren't shortcuts for that. You cannot take risks with people's safety, with people's health. But we all know that, certainly in the UK, with the Health and Safety Executive, we've got the Institute of Occupational Safety and Health campaigning around these issues. I think it's really the speed with which we're going to have to implement these procedures that really is the challenge, not whether or not we should be doing them.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story is taken from Fast Company, in which Robert Ewan, co-founder of San Francisco-based software company Monograph, explains why the company has been doing four-day work weeks since it launched. Ewan states that, "We've seen from first-hand experience how it ultimately continues to be a net positive gain for our business over time. For starters, the four-day work week made the transition to working from home full-time due to the pandemic a lot smoother." He goes on to say, "I found that giving my employees the option to take a midweek end, as we come to call it, provides them with a much needed day off in the middle of the week to rest and recuperate, not only to power through the rest of their tasks, but also to keep their mental strength high in deep focus mode." Kate, would you agree with Ewan that the four-day work week is good for business?
Early results seem to suggest that there's not only no loss in productivity, there's an improvement in retention, there's an improvement reported in well-being. So it would certainly seem that we welcome increased leisure time. I'm not sure how this four-day week in this particular company enabled them to switch to home working during the pandemic. That seems a curious claim, but maybe it was about more flexible attitudes, measuring outputs rather than presenteeism, all those sorts of factors that we know go into keeping people in offices. And of course, we're challenging that again. So early days, Rod, but I think the four-day week obviously has its advocates, has its proponents. But as I've said frequently, it's not available for everybody. Customer-facing sectors have to be there. And of course, the more leisure people have, the more they want to consume leisure activities that invariably are delivered by people who are not able to be on a four-day week. So there is a bigger issue here, I think, for society. But where you're enabling people to take more control over their working week, I think without question, that increased autonomy does positively impact feelings of well-being and, of course, loyalty to your employer.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story is particularly interesting because it describes how a town council's first virtual meeting descended into a row over hanging baskets when some councillors wanted the town to look its best during the lockdown. The story by Gareth Butterfield describes how Ashbourne's town councillors spent a portion of their first ever virtual meeting engaged in a row over whether hanging baskets should be put up across the town during the coronavirus lockdown. Responding to the fact that the decision, which was agreed upon at a previous meeting, to go ahead with hanging baskets this year had been overturned, Councillor Denise Brown said she was not happy that the extent of authority afforded by delegated powers could overturn a decision made by all councillors. This was seconded by the chairman of the Environment Committee, Councillor Caroline Cooper. She said, "I have to say that I'm not happy about it either. Two councillors have decided that we will not have hanging baskets when it has been moved in council that hanging baskets should be put up. An extraordinary virtual meeting of the council was arranged immediately for the same evening, and the local newspaper provided an update that the town streets will soon be adorned with a riot of colourful flowers after Ashbourne Town Council agreed to press on with plans to erect hanging baskets this year." Kate, what does this story tell us about effective meetings?
Well, it tells us that people are learning to turn up, doesn't it? And that actually perhaps a reluctance to engage with online meetings led to this because so few people were making the decision about the hanging baskets. I think it also tells us if people don't like a decision, they rarely accept it. They tend to keep revisiting it. But maybe it's an example of the Parkinson's law. The time spent on a matter is in inverse proportion to its importance. And not to trivialise hanging baskets, of course, because I imagine Ashbourne looks absolutely lovely when they're all out. But against the backdrop of a pandemic, it doesn't seem to be that important. But for the moment when they're thinking about it and trying to do something positive, anxiety disappears and they've got a real problem that they can really solve, which of course people usually like. As with so many of these things, superficially it looks like quite a trivial thing, but actually there's a lot more going on for those councils and those councillors. Thank you for entertaining this with Rod, and I hope we will drive through Ashbourne, even if virtually, and see what these hanging baskets actually look like.
I think that's an excellent idea, Kate. Well, that's a lovely moment to conclude this week's episode, Kate. And learners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again for your insights on these stories.
Thank you, Rod.